are very thankful also to have our guests here, the whole section from Hope Hub, and so we're thankful for them being here today. We like to have different guests from the community during Sanctity of Life Month, but schedule-wise, it worked out the best today to have our friends from the Hope Hub today. I'm going to give you the tiniest bit and let them do the rest. When I moved here 8 years ago, I went to this little rinky-dink coffee shop in Xenia that looks like it's not really a coffee shop. It looks like it's a coffee shop trying to be a library, trying to be who knows. But anyway, they start expanding, right? And then there's one in Beaver Creek and there's this and that. And so I get to meet the owners of Coffee Hub and talk with them. And then I start hearing about Hope Hub. And so over the years, just hearing more and more and wanting to get to a point where we could find out what's going on there. What does it look like with us as a church? Is there a partnership available there for us? And so I got the opportunity to get to sit down with Missy a few months ago and just talk through about what God's doing, not only through her life, but then the ministry of Hope Hub and then the other individuals involved in Hope Hub as well. So I wanted so much for them to be able to be here with us today, so we're very thankful. I'm going to welcome Missy at this time. She's going to come and speak for a little bit about what's going on out there, give a testimony, give you guys the introduction, and then going to hand off, I think, to a few different people to kind of let us know a little bit more. And so we're just going to kind of let it flow. We're not going to be overly worried about schedule and time. Yes, in a church, we just said that. We're going to be all right. And so thank you so much. Let Missy know you're glad here today by welcoming her.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. It is an honor and a privilege to be here. And I have to confess, I have a five-year-old that lives inside of me that every time I get a mic, I just want to say, breaker, breaker, 1-9. So. She lives deep inside. She goes out the weirdest times. So typically, I start off with what I have. But this morning, first, I want to introduce you to Drew. And she is our housing manager at Hope Hub. So she lives on site with the ladies, and she keeps all of us functioning. And she's been working on some stuff. And so I thought it's important to first understand the why of Hope Hub before I go into the what and the how.
Hello and good morning. My name is Drew Swisler. It is so great to be here and have an opportunity to talk about Hope Hub and our mission in helping women in recovery. I wanted to speak shortly about the need for action in the area of addiction recovery and other supporting programs as well. Many people may not recognize the extreme circumstances that our state and country are facing due to the drug epidemic. The cities that we all live in and drive through every day are plagued with overdose and illicit drug use. In 2017, Montgomery County, Ohio was tagged the overdose capital with the highest overdose deaths in the country. Thousands of people are dying every year just in Ohio from unintentional drug overdose. Addiction is an area that we all should be interested in helping. Addiction does not discriminate. The same county of Montgomery had almost 50 overdoses of children under the age of 18 in 1 year. Hope Hub was founded on the idea that something was missing in the recovery process. People struggling with addiction did not just need to get sober. They needed a place where they could learn how to live life again, be taught life skills, have a mentor that coaches them and helps them pay off debt, get their license and their job, and a spiritual mentor that helps them learn about God and build a relationship with Jesus. Hope Hub has utilized these tools and seen women be transformed and become free from the bondage of addiction. We want to take over the country with our mission and see radical change that will not only impact our homes and neighborhoods, but help break the generational plague of addiction and end the ongoing drug epidemic in our country. Thank you so much for listening. I'll hand it back to Missy.
Thank you. Good job. Okay, so I need you guys to talk back to me just a little bit. So when I ask you guys a question, I'm going to ask you a question. When I say addict, and I say the word recovery, and I say the word addiction, and I say the word drugs, what comes to mind for you? Death? Your son? Yeah.
Hopelessness.
Hopeless.
Brokenness.
Broken? Yeah.
Lost.
So have you, or maybe anyone you know, that has ever experienced or struggled with addiction? I'm sure there's people from this church, family members, friends, cousins, sisters, daughters, nieces, that have dealt with addiction. What if I told you that the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, that the opposite of addiction is connection? And so I've thought multiple times, like, how do you explain addiction to someone who's never been addicted? And so this is my attempt at that. So have any of you guys ever fasted and ever gone on a fast?
Yeah.
What's the longest you guys have fasted? Got any 3 days in here?
Yeah.
4 days? Any more than four? Three? Okay. That 3 days is hard. I tried that one time, and like 12 hours in, I thought for sure I was going to die. I think I might die. So I want you guys to go with me to like that second day, that third day, and think about it. Think about what did it feel? What was happening in your body? What were your thoughts? I bet about day two or day three, you're thinking like, I would do anything for a cheeseburger right now. Stop thinking about food. You can do this. Was that thought of food and hunger completely consuming you? Did you start this fast hoping that at day two, hunger would completely consume you, that it would control your every thought? Now, what if I had looked at you and told you, stop it? Just stop. Stop being hungry. Make the choice. Have enough faith. Believe a little harder. Pray a little more. And stop being hungry. You would look at me like I had lost my ever-loving mind for sure. Welcome to addiction. This is what it's like. It totally consumes you. And before you know it, it robs you of your complete identity. An addict is never someone that we aspire to be. No person ever takes their first drink or smokes their first joint hoping that one day, maybe I can become an heroin addict. But it traps you before you know it. And something you once did to cope with life quickly becomes your identity. So I grew up in Xenia, and I have two kids. I have two brothers and two sisters, and we were a very close family growing up. If the church doors were open, we were in the church. If you lived in my mom's house, that's what you did. No questions asked. We didn't have a whole lot of us kids, but we never really lacked for anything. My dad was a mechanic, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom, and she raised all five of us crazy kids, and I promise you, she had both hands full. We were a wild bunch. My childhood was fairly normal from the outside looking in. We went to church, had a two-parent home. We were clothed. We were fed. We played sports. We celebrated all of the holidays. Like I said, it was pretty typical from the outside looking in, but there was definitely dysfunction happening there. At about 6 or 7, I was sexually abused by a family member, and then I was told that it was my fault, how horrible I was, how could I do that? At age 17, I was date raped, but no one believed me because at that time, I was partying, I was drinking, smoking weed, cocaine, acid. I mean, after all, it was my fault, wasn't it? People told me I shouldn't have been hanging out with the people who I was with. By the time I was 17, I was not only using cocaine and acid, but I was pregnant. I managed somehow to graduate high school, and I had had my daughter. And soon after that, I had met this guy online, because that fixes everything, a relationship will. So I gave custody of my daughter to my parents, and I moved to Alabama. And my life from there only went from bad to worse. Here, I got into an extremely abusive relationship, had a son, and soon lost custody of him. And that is the point when I really quit caring. I really had no reason to live at that point. And then, to top it off, one day I received a call that my dad was diagnosed with terminal cancer and had only 6 weeks left to live. So I packed up and I moved back to Ohio, and not long after being back, that's when I was introduced to heroin. And this was the closest that I had ever come to the gates of hell. This drug had completely consumed me. On this, I overdosed more than 8 times. I was in and out of rehab. I was in and out of jail. And my last trip to jail landed me at a program called the Monday Program. And that is where Jesus was waiting on me. I was reading this book called Battlefield of the Mind. And in the book, she's talking about the Israelites and how they had wandered through the desert. And there was this one mountain that they continued to circle. And there was a sentence in here, and it says, "You have been on this mountain long enough." And when I read that, that sounded audible to me. And because I could experience moments of sobriety. I could get off of the drug. I could get sober. But I could never break that cycle of living. I could never break that cycle of thinking. And so my sister and her husband visited me regularly, and they suggested a long-term program. So begrudgingly, I went to yet another program and spent 19 months there. And this was a place for me where religion turned into a relationship, and I experienced the transformation of Jesus' love. This was the place where my heart and my life completely changed. But as amazing as the program was, the real work began when I graduated from the program, because now I had to do actual life. And I was expected at 41 to be able to do it really well. So not long after I graduated my program, I was in need of a job. I needed to be able to take care of myself. I needed to get a license and a car and do all of the things. And so I was introduced to Cynthia Stemple, and she offered me a job at the Coffee Hub. Knew nothing about coffee, but I'm like, sure, let's try it out. And after about a year of my being there, she and I began to wonder about others who were coming out of prison or out of addiction. Like, what would they do? Who would teach them? Who would help them to create a life that they love? So together we started our nonprofit, Hope Hub Xenia. And so at Hope Hub Xenia, we are a long-term transformational living home for women. We use the word transformational because recovery is so much more than just simply getting clean. Recovery is creating a life that you love to live. My favorite verse says, "So Christ has truly set us free." But then it goes on to say, "Now make sure that you stay free." So imagine a space where someone could practice life, where someone could learn how to stay free. A home where someone has the opportunity to mature emotionally, physically, mentally, and spiritually. Learning who they are while experiencing real life, but in a safe, grace-filled environment, where they are able to learn how to make healthy choices, where they are able to become transformed by the renewing of their mind and create new healthy habits, creating new ways of thinking and responding, and creating healthy community. As I said earlier, the opposite of addiction is connection. And most people in addiction live the opposite of connected. They live isolated. Connection and community is where we get to experience God and growth and change and wholeness. This connection can completely change the trajectory of someone's life. So think about this with me. One woman who is a mother of 2 children, she is connected to 2 people, and her life is transformed. Those 2 kids now have the opportunity to live a life that they never could have imagined. These kids who had bounced around and had seen only God knows what, now know what it means to have security, to have a mom who's consistent, a mom who guides them, who leads them, a mom who makes healthy relationship choices, surrounding these 2 kids with a community of believers, women who help this mom navigate dating and then marriage, a place where she shows her young daughter what it means to honor herself and to honor others. So this same mom is also a sister to 4 siblings, a relationship that was once completely severed. However, now she's having dinner with their families. She's involved in their lives, their children's lives. She's now an aunt. She's a sister. She's a friend. This same woman, she's also a daughter. She's a niece. She's a cousin. And this one investment into this one woman has just impacted a family of over 60, 27 of which she has weekly contact with. One life is never just one life. This one life transformed, that was my life. The investment that was made into me has not only transformed my life, but has changed generations to come after me. All because two people chose to invest into me, one broken, addicted, isolating, and hurting girl. And this same woman that stands in front of you, I was once hopeless and without a future, but now I get to live a life that I absolutely love. I now have the opportunity to help other women who sit in the exact same place that I was experience the exact same freedom that I get to have the same good life that I get to live, all because two people chose to invest in me. And so today I'm going to introduce you to a couple of our ladies from Hope Hub. I think that it would be amazing if you could hear their story and a little bit of their journey. But there are a few things at Hope Hub that we do goal setting and we do all of that stuff. But what I've come to understand and believe to be true is that the inside me that nobody sees, that's the piece that matters most. And so we have some things that we want to become at Hope Hub. And so a couple of these, one of these is transformation. At Hope Hub, we become transformed by the renewing of our mind. We know that transformation is necessary to experience freedom from life-controlling substances and situations. When we do this, we are then empowered to create a life we love to live. We become love. At Hope Hub Xenia, we become love for all people. We know that it's Christ's love that compels us, and it's his love that persuades the hearts of people. We know his love has a gravitational pull to it, and it's easy and inviting. When we do this, we experience his kindness, which inspires us to turn from our old way of living, equipping us for a life of freedom. And relationship. At Hope Hub Xenia, we become connected people who value relationship and unity. We welcome deep and meaningful conversations that lead to understanding. It's no secret that addiction and how to navigate it is a very tense topic to try to engage in. But we know that hard conversations and good questions lead us to a deeper understanding of each other. And when we can understand one another, we can then connect with one another. And so, as Gabor Mate says, the opposite of addiction is not sobriety. The opposite of addiction is connection. And so today you're going to have the opportunity to hear about two of the ladies at Hope Hub Xenia who have experienced transformation. Alexis, you want to go down first? This is Alexis. She has actually beginning of March, we're celebrating our 1 year of being open, which is phenomenal. So Alexis has not only been with us the longest. Thank you. This girl's giving me a run for my money. But when I say, like, I get to stand next to a miracle, it has been the wildest thing to watch. Like, I would come in hot and heavy, like, we need to address this. And before I could even get it out of my mouth, she's like, I need to talk to you. I'm like, I love watching the Spirit work in these ladies' lives. So it has been phenomenal. And she's going to be our first graduate. She graduates here in the next month. Yeah. So I'm going to let Alexis share a little of her story.
Thank you. Good morning. Okay, so I'm a talker, so I had to write it down so I wouldn't go overboard. Okay. Hello, my name is Alexis. I got to Hope Hub on April 18th. I had just gotten out of jail that day. Rachel from the Hope Hub actually picked me up. And she looked at me, she said, can I have a hug? I had just given birth to my third daughter, and I gave her up for adoption in March of last year because of my spiraling drinking and drug use. I knew it was time to change. My first morning at Hope Hub consisted of a visit with CPS about my four-year-old daughter and an expired ID. I began counseling twice a week and chose to surrender to God and what the program was asking of me. I slowly but surely made small steps in the right direction, one good decision at a time. I got an updated ID, paid off all of my Greene County probation fees, and two other courts in two other counties. One day at the BMV, I by chance ended up taking and passing my written driving test. I had my permit. I ended up scheduling, taking, and passing my actual driver's test. In my notes it says, what? I haven't had a valid license in over 7 years. I got a job at Country Club of the North, where I've continued to build a work family, started getting visitations with my daughter. We celebrated her 5th birthday and my 30th birthday. She's actually upstairs right now, or with the kids. I chose to work a 12-step program and finish my steps with my sponsor. After months and months of finding rides to and from work, I actually bought my first vehicle that I paid for. I got car insurance that I paid for. This was a game changer for my daughter and I. I can't believe this is my life right now. Now, almost 11 months later, I get my daughter every weekend, all weekend, and I just began the search for our new home with full reunification in our near future. I fell in love with Xenia Nazarene Church and my fellows in Bible study. My daughter attends with me every Sunday. We found our home there. Tomorrow, I meet with our pastor to discuss baptism for my daughter and I. This is the longest sobriety time I've ever had and the most whole I've ever been. When things are great, rough, and in between, I lean on God and truly have faith in his plans for me. Thank you.
So I think what we get to see with Alexis is exactly that. Like, Alexis's decision and choice to stay in the uncomfortable and do the hard things is now she's changing her daughter's future. She's changing the things that her daughter will have to experience, her daughter will have to see. And she's not only fought for her own life, but she has fought for her daughter's life. And she is giving her all of the things that she never would have had. And I'm very, very proud of that young lady there. This next young lady, she was like, I'm speaking. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. Yes, I am. So we do a little cliff pushing off at Hope Hub. But this is Dawn. She called me from another program to come get her. And Rachel and I hopped in the car and drove, 2 hours? To go get her, and wound up in Kentucky to get gas and got lost and almost died. And so it was a whole adventure getting her here.
Good morning. So my name's Dawn, and for the past 17 years, I've been trapped in the darkest place possible. I was looking for a way out, but not really sure how to do it or what to do. As a child, I grew up the daughter of two addicts who pretty much left me in the care of my grandparents. They loved me as their own and tried the very best they could with me, but I was dealing with abandonment issues from my parents, struggling with crippling anxiety, depression, low self-esteem, and a lot of trauma. When I would spend time with my parents, it wasn't all bad, but most of it was. As I got older, I spent a lot more time with my mom. We were very close. She was in her own addiction and in an abusive relationship. When his abuse wasn't enough for her, he would turn it on me. And that was life-changing. Early in my teenage years, I discovered that there were ways that I could completely numb those feelings and not have to face reality, so that's exactly what I did. I turned to drugs and prescription medication to get my escape, and it didn't take long for that to completely take over my life. But before I knew it, I was sitting in jail looking at a very long prison sentence for crimes I was committing to support my drug habit. I thought that was going to be it for me, and I would do my time, come home, and never touch drugs again. I was never expecting to get the news 3 months before I got out that my mother had died from a drug overdose. That was something I should have been prepared for, but wasn't. Although it crushed me, at the time I had two children of my own that I couldn't imagine leaving and having them get the same news that I got and that I was gone forever. That gave me the motivation to never pick up another drug as long as I lived. But that's not what happened. Her death took me down an even darker place I could have never imagined. When I was released from prison, I met an amazing man who I married and had my third child with. My life was on track. I was happy on the outside, but on the inside, I was just an alone, scared little girl again. I couldn't deal with those emotions, and never having actually dealt with my childhood trauma, it didn't take me long to turn to the only thing I knew how to numb those feelings, and I was right back deep in my addiction. But this time, I wasn't only hurting myself. I was dragging my kids through it, my husband through it, and after years of getting clean and relapsing, my life had no purpose. My children were no longer being cared for by me, and my days consisted of me and my husband doing anything and everything we could to satisfy our addiction. 11 months ago, me and my husband were both arrested, and that started my real story. Still not sure what to do, I decided that it was time to go to rehab and regain my life. I spent 90 days in a treatment facility. I was clean, but there was still something missing. I was given the number by my husband to a faith-based living facility, which very quickly changed my life. In September, I moved to Hope Hub, and I was shown just how much Jesus could change my life. And that was the missing piece to my happiness. I could not do this alone. For many years, this was the solution that I didn't want to face. I mean, after everything I did, why would Jesus want to help me? I lived my life ashamed and in complete fear, and that pain was great enough to accept help from any source that I could, but the one that saved me was God. Once I learned that the kingdom of God was within me, I no longer felt the need to try to battle my addiction on my own. I knew that it was possible for me to have my own story of a miracle just like the ones in the Bible. I can stand here today and say that I have been healed. I no longer have to use mind-altering substances to get out of bed in the morning. The power of Jesus changed my life. Today I am happy, and there is joy in my heart. I wake up grateful to be alive. I'm rebuilding relationships with my children, my family, who have turned their back on me. My husband and I are rebuilding our relationship. He has completed treatment and given his life to the Lord, and we are working to repair everything in our life. I have a job, I got my license back, and none of that would have been possible without the Hope Hub and the knowledge and support to turn my will and my life over to Jesus. Thank you.
But did you die?
That's our running theme at Hope Hub. Every time we do something hard, that lives in our head. So I really appreciate you allowing us to have some time here to just share our hearts with you, to share what we're doing at Hope Hub. The why really is because there's the thing that I found is there was this gap of recovery. They do the clinical space really well, and then they'll send you off to a sober living house where it's like, go figure out life and stay clean. You know what I mean? But the part that changed my life was that middle ground of having people to come alongside me, to support me, to share different perspectives and thought processes and ways of living life, to really just help me to create my life. And they don't, I have not found anywhere else that kind of does that what we do. We are a little bit of a hybrid between a program and the sober living. We're high structure, super high accountability. Obviously, it's creating the healthy disciplines, but our main focus is our internal life, understanding the why behind our what deficits have been driving us, understanding, you know, the different wounds of omission, wounds of commission, the things that have happened to us or have been left out of our lives, and then learning how to allow the love of Christ to fill that spot and to totally heal that place to where he becomes our source and not the things and the people of this world. And you guys might not know this, but your church has already been investing in our ladies. You have one member from your church who is a spiritual mentor with one of our ladies. Another member from your church gave a vehicle to another one of our ladies. So you guys have already been loving on these women very well. So I appreciate it. I appreciate your investment and your time. I'm just going to open it up. I don't know if you guys have any questions or anything.
I do.
Yes, ma'am.
So if people want to get involved, what are some different areas? Obviously, money, resources, and supplies, but like, what else do you need? What else can be done?
So what else can be done? Like you said, obviously financial support, resources, supplies, but really what we need is women who are willing to invest in these ladies. So whether you want to come cook a meal and do some painting or teach crocheting or, you know, go for a hike, or hey, there's this women's weekend thing, let's take the ladies to that. Really just people who, I need women who are willing to give the ladies rides. So when we get a woman in, usually phase one or two, she has no license, no car, no nothing like that. So the different appointments and all the places she needs to go. So people who might can say, I don't have 12 hours a day to donate, but I can take someone somewhere for an hour or so to get on our volunteer list to do that. If you have a special skill set or teaching is your thing and you want to come teach a group, a Bible study, something like that. We can do all of the things and those are good and they're fun, but all of those things will stay at Hope Hub when the ladies leave. But the thing that they can take with them are the relationships and the community and the connections that they have built. And that is the piece that transforms lives. Like, we can do what we can do for a year and a half, and we can do the programming, and we always need help. We need volunteers who want to just come hang out on a Saturday, who want to be there through the week, teach a class, you know, cook a meal, whatever. But my main focus is to just surround these ladies with grace and with love and with acceptance and just build a community around them so that when they leave us, their success rate just doubles. Yes, ma'am.
How many ladies are you working with at a time?
You're doing good. You got it. So our house is small. We have one housing manager who lives on site, which is Drew, and then we can house four ladies at a time. We're praying through possibly opening a second home towards the end of this year for one of our like later phases. My personality is to do more and a lot, so obviously I would like to have a place with 50 or 100 women, but what I have learned is that the smaller, the better we can connect and meet the needs of the ladies, whereas if you have 50, you're just kind of checking a box. Here, we are invested in their lives and their children's lives, and so we keep it smaller.
What does that process look like if you want to volunteer, whether it's, you know, driving ladies to appointments or coming and sitting at the house or teaching a class? Like, what does that look like? Is there an application, background check, et cetera?
Yes. So if you go to our website at hopehubzenia.org, there will be a link there for a volunteer application. You fill that volunteer application out, and then one of our staff will reach out to you. He's ready with the mic back here. Think we're good? Oh, wait, here comes one more. Laura's coming with one.
Right now, do you guys have any physical needs that could be met, whether it be clothing items, hygiene, anything for the house, anything in particular that...
Yeah, so physical, practical needs right now, toilet paper, paper towels, cleaning supplies, bottles of water, we need gift cards, so gas cards, grocery cards, you know, Walmart, Kroger, things like that, laundry detergent, hygiene items, deodorant, shampoo, conditioner, that kind of stuff, lotions.
Okay. because girls like to be special, so we got to take care of them.
You got me up here? There we go. If you have a question, throw your hand in there. That way they can see and get that mic. I know there's some out there. You're thinking, while you're thinking, help us out with something that's been mentioned, which is really important. I think something that hit me in my own personal experience and bias in California, going to 3rd Street there in Crocker and seeing people, men and women, help us with what's already been said, that drug usage, addiction at large, right? Not just, I saw more drug usage there, but addiction at large, how it's non-discriminatory, it's non-prejudicial. It's not, because sometimes I think people have this idea like, well, that boy there, he's from a busted family, he's going to do it. But the doctor behind that boy is like, well, he's a great guy. Yeah, he's in the community. He's never, never going to. So maybe speak to the fact that when it comes to addiction, it's non-discriminatory. It's not prejudicial. It's not, there may be risk factors, but it's not A plus B equals.
No, it is not an A plus B. Addiction is just an external fix for an internal wound, an internal problem. And the thing that kind of frustrates me is we talk about addiction and people are like, oh, I don't shoot up heroin. Oh, I don't get drunk. But what about the porn you're looking at when no one else is around? What about the 6 meals that you're eating that you know you shouldn't eat? What about the credit cards that are overdrawn and overspent, the addiction of shopping? So the reality is, if you really want to boil it down and get into all of the theology of it, addiction is a sin issue. Addiction is a misplaced worship.
Right.
It is an idol that we have placed on our hearts to worship, to seek validation, to seek pain-free. And so addiction has not escaped any one of us. It might look a little different, but it has not escaped any one of us. I went from drugs to men to work to working out. So the addiction just kind of follows. Like I said, it is an external fix to an internal problem.
I appreciate that, because again, I think the first time I met a neurosurgeon down there, and I thought, uh-huh, yeah, you were a neurosurgeon, I'm sure. And they're like, no, go look him up. And I do, you know, Cedar Sinai, he was one of their leading neurosurgeons to deal with the pressure got into cocaine, and that's the spiral. Mary, I mean, you would have seen him and thought this and that, but that was the story. It was all over the map because of what you said, worshipers finding bad ways to worship that can't fulfill, change his sin. Yeah, for sure. So anybody have a question? You had one come up in your mind. Somebody raise a hand, throw it in the air. Wave it like you don't care. No? Anybody? Help us out, because it's already been asked. Obviously, there's applications. There's opportunities to come do Bible studies. There's opportunities to buy stuff. I always say at our church, or I say it regularly, I don't know if people believe it, I'm out to get as much of their money as possible for the gospel and for eternity. Really? And I'm looking, the window will close eventually in America.
I support that.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. And so, see, I'm not alone, I'm not crazy, there you go. So anyway, the window will close eventually on our opulence here in America, and we'll rue the day that we had. And it's not wrong to enjoy, certainly, but there's so much opportunity. So give us some creative ways. Are there people who can, I know they can buy toilet paper, they can give gift cards. Are there people who need to maybe buy a house for Hope Hub?
Yes.
Are there
please.
People who need to take their car payment, get an older car, and try to figure out how to buy another car? I mean, give us some other ways. There's gift cards, all that, and that's all important, all right? But I'm just thinking there's got to be even bigger chunks that people could use their leverage and their finances and their credit score, et cetera, to make differences for eternity beyond I dropped off toilet paper, which I'm not saying is not important. No.
Absolutely. So like I said, one of our goals by the end of 2024 is to have purchased a second home, which would then turn into our phase 4 home. Our phase 4 is more like sober living, where you're just kind of doing your thing. And so we're finding that when we're running all 4 phases in one house, it gets a little chaotic in there. And so we're hoping to purchase a home by the end of this year. And then the reality is it costs us, what, Rachel, 6, 5? It costs us about $6,000 a month to function Hope Hub. All of the house payment, our house payment is $850 a month. And then when you add in all of the bills, and currently all of our staff is volunteer. We pay very little to our CFO to do numbers because I know just about enough about numbers to really get in trouble, so stay away from that. You know, so our goal is to be able to provide another full-time staff by the end of this year. And so that is, what's the number on that? 14? 14,000 a month, yeah. So our projected budget to be able to hire another full-time staff, a part-time staff, and to function another home would be 14,000 a month, right?
So maybe help us in. You're coming up on the one-year anniversary, correct?
Yes.
Right. Give us raw numbers, if you would, or down there with the numbers as well.
I'm just going to look at Rachel and I'll repeat them.
If you don't mind, and maybe this is too much behind the scenes, just help us get an idea. How many church partnerships in Greater Dayton area do you have? And how many individual partnerships do you have? I'm asking the non-numbers. Numbers, help us.
Yeah. So, here's been my tension, and I'll just be transparent. Getting church partners is a
lousy.
It's a challenge. Because before they hear the heart of God, they want to know, what is your theology? Do you speak in tongues? Do you not speak in tongues? Do you believe in this? And I'm like,
how many success stories do you have?
I just want to love people. Like, I need help. Yeah. So I have found it a great challenge to really try to get too many. But we have, what would you say, eight to ten.
So you nailed it, because there's only eight churches in Dayton, right? So.
Right. There's like 50 in Xenia. So yeah, like eight to ten. And so all of the rest of our support comes strictly from personal donors, private donors, people who have committed monthly support. There's a couple who give, you know, one big time a year. I think we just got one for $10,000. Someone was selling their business, so we have people to do that. And so the big support is amazing, but the reality is it's the 25 a month, it's the 50 a month, it's the 100 a month people who have committed to that, that keep us functioning, that keep our doors open, and that my CFO loves so she can budget for me.
Right. Well, I bring that up not to sound like we're church bashing, but it's more just to make it clear that sometimes we bemoan societal issues, but we don't do anything about it as a church, especially where it meets money, where mission is. That's why we give. We give for mission, right, locally and abroad. And so I'm always somewhat, I shouldn't be surprised when I hear about a lack of church participation at the help level or the money level, and then sometimes the need to feel like I'm trying to find I'm trying to find 400 individuals rather than there's, I could have 20 churches, you know, for like, not that there wouldn't be a good combo of both. So you said it too, obviously you guys need a house. You would also be glad for people to use their services for you.
Absolutely.
All, whether it's plumbing, mechanic, accounting, fill in the blank.
Yes.
Are there any of those big needs on the horizon?
She said all of it. So something I have been praying through and thinking through. Right now, the ladies with the individual counseling and stuff like that, we will utilize different counseling services. But my bigger picture and end goal is that we would have just a wealth of services with people who are kind of vetted already that we could transition the ladies into. So if you have anything and like the clinical space, you know, whether it's trauma counseling, biblical counseling, marriage counseling, family counseling, parenting. We need people to teach parenting classes. I didn't realize that till I got into it. I'm like, oh, we need that. You know, just different services like that, because as we outsource, the struggle we're finding is you either have to go somewhere that's CareSource or Medicaid, which that gene pool is kind of small there, or we can outsource, but then we foot the bill for that, which is fine, but that creates another cost. So if we had people who were willing to volunteer their time to counsel and meet with these ladies, that would be
Do they need any certifications? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, you all are not government supported.
Correct.
That's a major difference in this program than most programs, not government supported. And so does there need to be any certifications for some of these things, or just a vetting with you all, correct, for parenting, marriage,
with us and
finances,
Holy Spirit certified.
Right. Holy Spirit certified. There you go.
But no, I technically don't, because we don't do any billing. We don't do clinical services, so I stay all the way out of that space.
So I bring that up to say there are people in the room, no doubt, you may not say, well, I'm a financial planner. I've got my certs and degrees in. I don't know. Have you done Dave Ramsey before? Have you done something else, right? Are you competent? Well, then this is somebody who could be a help. Are you really good at it? Do you have a business where you can employ people? Do you need a tax write-off for your business? I mean, these are all avenues to think creatively about. Do you have something? Do you have a knack for flipping and buying stuff? Figure that out, whatever it is. And I'd say this to our young folks, too. Don't think this is mom and dad's jam. If you have some opportunities and ways to create some kind of either usable goods for them or finances, figure out what that looks like, challenge yourself, and make that happen. And you can be a part, even at your age, and being invested in the community in a great way and a need, because it's not just it's Hope Hub of Xenia, but this is greater than Xenia. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's greater than Xenia. Absolutely. So what other things would you tell us? Either people are here and they've heard they can submit an application, they can serve, they can volunteer, they can help, they can give copious amounts of monies and buy houses.
Yeah, they can.
That's where you guys could have said,
for
amen.
Sure can
you
that.
Can give copious amounts of money and buy houses. Let's hear it. Xenia is cheaper. So some of you could buy a house. I feel confident.
Come
some of you. It's getting more expensive,
yeah.
But it's getting more expensive.
Yeah.
But you can still do it. Or you're connected to wealthy people who can also do it. Listen, make you friends. I'm making no bones about it. You got rich friends that you know need a tax write-off. Make the connections there. Man, pastor's talking about money. You better believe it, right? There are a ton of people. They don't have to be Christian for you to make that happen and help them understand that it's really, really important. And then think about your trades, how you can be engaged and involved in that. So, any final thoughts? I think one question I would ask is, it's non-discriminatory. Maybe give us your top two or three at-risk things to identify about yourself. I mean, I'm saying in general, like about ourselves or about somebody we know and care about. What would maybe be a few at-risk things that would be helpful identifiers? I get there may not be a perfect answer here, but...
Well, obviously, the first identifier is behavioral change. Is someone acting outside of their character? Have they quit calling you? Have they quit coming around? That would be the first one, depending on how close you are to them. Are they asking you for money? Have they just been through something traumatic in their life? Help me out here, babe. Yeah. Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that just like the change in someone's character and their behavior and their attitudes.
Help us, how do we ask hard questions because we love them? So for instance, after one of my wife's very first surgeries, we were shocked at the amount of meds she was given, mm-hmm. prescription-based meds. I mean, if I told you how much, you would just be stunned, like, are you serious? But it made me realize, no wonder so many younger mothers after some procedures can become unintentionally down that road because of just the shove in their way. So how do we help ask ourselves hard questions to people we love? So for instance, she had me there to say, how are we going to handle this? How are we going to be comfortable? This is a narcotic. What are we going to do with this? So how do we ask hard questions with people we love if we see some of those changes, or they're having a trauma, or they're having an event or a moment?
Do not come accusing someone. Don't say, you did, you're doing, why are you? Come with a heart to seek to understand, hey, I noticed there's something going on. You're acting a little off. Is something going on in your life? Are you okay? So don't come with accusation, come with the heart to seek to understand. Don't come to correct a behavior. Speak to the heart of the issue, if that makes sense. Instead of you're bad, you're doing, ask the question, you know, what's going on? Are you okay? Has something happened? Share your story with me. And I have learned that the most powerful ministry that I've been able to do is the ministry of presence. I'm a fixer by nature. I can sit with someone and in 10 minutes, I can tell you the four things you need to do to fix your life, which is pride in me thinking that I can do that. And what God so graciously spoke into me is that, like, your ability to see the problems in someone else's life that needs fixed is really discernment for you to learn how to ask better questions.
That's good.
And the power of presence and the ministry of presence of 9 times out of 10, I don't even have the opportunity to say the thing that I want to say. It's just me sitting with someone in the mud that matters most. And when someone feels seen and heard and they feel safe and loved, then you really don't even half the time have to ask the question. They'll just share.
Yeah. We're hard on Job's friends, rightly. But one thing they got right was what? They came and sat for a while and then started conversing. They got a lot of stuff wrong after that theology-wise. But up until that point, they were right on track. Right. That's really good. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to make a big pivot here on purpose. Let's move away. If I know connection group leaders and some children's ministries, you might have the next hour ready and whatnot. Let's pivot away from that. We won't worry about it. We'll just bump that to next week on your schedules, okay? Let's do this. We're going to enjoy and be thankful for our friends being here with us. We're going to have them in the foyer so that you can ask some questions. There's more than one. You can get around. You can circulate. If anybody here from Hope Hub is like, that sounds like the worst thing known to mankind, you can find a way to make yourself scarce, I suppose.
No,
but I don't think she's going to let you do that, right? So we want to encourage you, because here's a reality. In this room right now, there are people who have either had some level of this in some capacity in their life, and it could be outside the substance realm. It could be in the chasing a career, chasing a title, chasing a net worth, chasing whatever, and you want to talk about how do I take steps away from that addiction about that. There may be people in here just like, I've been in the substance realm before. How do I? There's somebody, no doubt, who has a son, a daughter, a grandma, a grandpa, somebody who that you're trying to pray with, work with, help. We want to give you a pathway to have that conversation, and because those conversations take a little bit of time, we want to give you and grant that time. So let's do this. Let's, number one, thank Missy and all our friends who have spoken today for us. And Missy, I'm going to have you guys go on out right now, and I'm going to pray with the congregation to say, just again, huge thank you for being here with us. So if you all want to, from Hope Hub, want to wander out that direction, I want to pray with you all here as a congregation. Thanks. I want to pray with you as a congregation, and I do want to just take a moment and invite anybody here. There will be some men and women out in the foyer that are going to go out. In our services, we always have what we have that we call an invitation. It's where we invite you to respond to what you've heard. Now, this morning has been a bit different on purpose. You've heard great truths about who our God is and how he's worthy of worship from the songs of praise we've sung. But then also you've heard about the power of Jesus to change and transform your life, but your eternity as well. There could be somebody here today, right now, man or woman, young or old. It's your first time here. You've been here a long time. I don't know. But today, right now, in your mind, God is pulling on you, showing you, you need that reconciliation. You need that relationship restored. It needs to be put back together. You don't have it. You've sought it something here. You've tried something there. But today's the day of salvation. I'm going to pray, and then we're going to have just a moment with the instrument playing. And during that time, it's not a time to, you know, worry about checking phone and do this or do that. It's a time to just take some stillness and ask God what he's encouraging you and stirring you about if you are a follower of Jesus. Maybe he's tugging on you about your usage of time, finances, way you can be engaged, involved, I don't know. But you might be here today and you say, I want to know more about Jesus. During that time, I want to ask you to take a bold, maybe difficult step, but a wonderful one, to walk right out to the foyer where there'll be some people ready to direct you. You saw Pastor Derek up here, the one-armed man. He can get you directed wherever you need to be to have a starting conversation. We're not here to twist your arm. We're here to start the conversation about where you at and what you believe. We all have a worldview. And who is Jesus and what is he able to do in and through your life? So I'm going to pray. And as after I pray, let's just take a moment with our heads bowed. And if you need to take some time to pray or you want to walk out, I encourage you to do that. So let's pray together. Father, we're thankful for today to know you, to love you, because you first loved us, that you would then make a pathway for us through forgiveness and salvation, not by the works that we think we could do, that we think make us moral or good or religious or righteous. No, those works are nothing but detestable in your sight because they can't gain or earn anything. It's just somebody who is in the throes and in the confines of sin, trying to do more things tainted by sin to somehow get rid of sin, and it's not going to happen. So thank you that you freed us from religion. Thank you that you freed us from our own ego and estimations. I pray today that you would help us. If there's somebody in the room who doesn't know what it is to be forgiven and freed and transformed by Jesus, that they'd have that boldness right now to walk right out. Man or woman, they're just going to decide, it's a little weird, it's a little tough, I'm going to do it. And they're going to just walk out, I pray. I pray for those of us who are your followers that will be challenged today to consider our own life, what we chase, what we pursue, what we worship. And then, Lord, I ask that you would stir us to have bold acts of faith of how we can be involved with Hope Hub. It may not be that everybody needs to, and that's okay, but maybe there's somebody stirred today, how they're going to change something in their finances, something in their time, something with their net worth on purpose. So, God, I ask that you'd help us. In the name of Jesus Christ, our Redeemer, amen.